Lake Effect continues here on WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Contributing producer Lucian Jung visits the kitchens of local residents as they prepare special family dishes that they remember from childhood in a series we call Family Recipes. This month, Jung visits the kitchen of Will Fellows as he shares his recipe for Devil's Food Cake. The dessert is an American classic enjoyed by many simply sprinkled with some powdered sugar or, for a far more indulgent take, you can top it with a layer of nice gooey frosting. Its light texture and tangy flavor set it apart from the traditional chocolate cake, and its easy preparation makes it an attractive dessert for busy families. For Fellows, growing up in a big family on a dairy farm made this recipe a childhood favorite.
Having grown up on a dairy farm where we drank raw milk as a family, straight from the bulk tank in the milk house on the farm, we always had ample supply of sour milk on hand. I remember quart jars of milk sitting on the back of the countertop, souring and dividing into the various layers as it coagulated. That was a wonderful ingredient for this cake recipe.
What is sour milk?
Milk that's not been pasteurized. It hasn't gone through the process that has killed off all the natural, really healthy bacteria content. I mean, there can be some unhealthy bacteria in raw milk too, but typically there's not. Typically, it's just healthy bacteria. And when that raw milk is left at room temperature for a while and it begins to sour, and essentially the bacteria grow and start to sort of cause the milk to turn more acidic and then coagulate and so on.
Is it thick? Like, I'm thinking it tastes like sour cream.
It doesn't get real thick in a uniform way. There, you get a watery layer and you get a more kind of coagulated layer of the milk solids, I suppose you could call it. Some people find it very tasty. I remember when I was maybe in grade school in this little school district in the town near where we lived, there was a foreign exchange student from South Africa, and she was visiting our farm. She wasn't staying with us during the school year. She was staying somewhere in town, but she came out to our farm, and she saw these jars, a jar of sour milk on the counter, and she said, "Is that calabash?" And my mom said, "Well, what is calabash?" And she said, "Well, it's like milk that's soured." And my mom said, "Yeah, that's what it is." And so she said, "Well, can I have some?" And she just wanted to drink a glass of it. And she loved it. It was like being transported back to South Africa in the middle of her Wisconsin school year. Yeah.
How interesting, some of these common ingredients.
Yeah. So anyway, the thing about sour milk is that it's a way in a cake recipe or any recipe where you're using leavening, like where you need leavening that's not yeast, it's a way to get the acid that you need to make the baking soda produce the carbon dioxide that makes the cake or whatever you're making raise. And
so it's going to be really fluffy.
So it'll have it has a fluffiness. And then you also, of course, you get the kind of slightly, tart is not really the word, but a certain kind of flavor dimension that I think really enhances the chocolate flavor that is missing for me when I eat a piece of chocolate cake that is not made with either, say, buttermilk or sour milk or something like that. It tastes flat to me.
Well, it seems like this is a kind of chocolate cake for adults. So it's less about the sweet and a little bit about some of the complexity of the sour milk and some of that tang.
We grew up eating it as kids and loved it. And I remember my brother, who is the only one of among our siblings who continued farming operation, he loved this chocolate cake. My mom would bake a whole, you know, like 9 by 13 sheet cake of this for him, and he would, with frosting, of course, on it. I'm not real wild about frosting. I mean, there are some frostings that I think are delicious, but I think a good cake, you know, just maybe with a little ice cream or a little bit of whipped topping or, you know,
powdered sugar.
Or powdered sugar, yeah, exactly. Something like that is really good. And, you know, I can dispense with the frosting easily, so.
Tell me a little bit about growing up on a dairy farm in Wisconsin. This was the 60s?
Well, yeah, I was born in 57. So, yeah, 60s and into the 70s. I finished high school in the mid-70s. So It was a dairy farm. By today's standards, it was a, you know, a small dairy farm. It wasn't a big mega dairy. Of course, they didn't exist then in the way that they do now with, you know.
Oh, really?
Well, you know, the massive operations with 1,000 or more cows all confined in one place. And no, that we had maybe 60, I don't know what the herd size was, 60 or 70 would have been considered a large herd of dairy cattle at that time.
And so did you, everyone in the family had to help with production?
Yeah. You know, typical chores for me were feeding the cows when they were in the barn, going up in the silo and throwing silage down, carrying pails of milk from the area, the cow, the barn where the milking was done, into the milk house and pouring them through the strainer into the milk tank.
Were a lot of the kid, your peers doing the same thing? Did you grow up, was it a farming community?
I'm sure that some of my peers, you know, some of the kids I went to school with probably did. They were probably very significant dairy farm or farm labor, you know, even on school days, they had to put in quite a few hours. But my dad was good about that. He did it himself. We did have, I had an uncle who worked with him too, so he wasn't devoid of help.
Were they encouraging you to get into the family business as you got older?
Not really. My brother, who is a year ahead of me in school, he had a pretty significant inclination to get into farming. So that kind of took care of the question of whether there would be somebody coming along to take over the operation. That was helpful. But I never got the sense from my parents that they were kind of trying to channel any of us in any particular direction. It was very much, you know, figure out what you want to do and do it. And frankly, you know, my dad didn't necessarily think when he was finishing high school that he would continue farming. He went off and had a career in the Navy and as a naval pilot, and he only came back to the farm because he was sort of, you know, his father sort of begged him to. So, you know, and brought us back then as young children from this life in the Navy.
How many generations was this farm in your family?
The farm was started by the first ancestor of my dad's in 1854. So, yeah, it's been well over 150 years as a continuous operation within the family.
And is this the farm that your brother took over?
And that's the farm that my brother and now his son, my nephew, operates. And it's gotten a lot bigger. The farm economy, of course, changed a lot in the late 20th century. Unless you were going to find some little specialty niche that you could be a small operation and be viable, if you were just going to be a conventional dairy farmer or a conventional grower of corn or soybeans or whatever, or, you know, producing pork or whatever, you had to get big or you had to get out. I mean, that was just the way it went. I think it's a very regrettable direction that farming has gone, but that's the way it went. And so they did get bigger. And
well, I think sometimes when we think about growing up on a farm back in the day, we think of this idyllic kind of life where it's hard work, but you have access to all these fresh ingredients and fresh dairy. And
well, it wasn't idyllic in a kind of storybook way. But when I was growing up on the farm, it was still a small enough operation and a family enough operation, you know, and with several siblings, there were, we had, you know, people to do various chores, so that you really felt, I mean, I felt very closely connected to the operation. It's kind of a cliche, but that thing about, you know, chores, having chores are good, to feel like you're, you know, you've got a part to play in this whole family enterprise. You know, there was kind of a housekeeping function on the farm that I took some real satisfaction in. We had a garden, a household garden that was very big, and my mom did a lot of freezing and canning, and she was of the old, you know, Great Depression childhood school, where, and she was the oldest of 9 siblings from a farm family herself, so she knew what it was like to sort of lay food by and have a sense of self-sufficiency to a great degree and not always rely on the market for everything. Yeah.
Well, I think there's got to be a lot of satisfaction when you're eating something like this devil's food cake. And you know, this ingredient that's so key to the recipe is something you produced yourself. It comes from the family farm.
Yeah, there is. And it's a way to use, you know, sometimes you would deliberately put a jar of fresh milk out to let it sour if you knew that you were going to need sour milk for pancakes or waffles or something you were going to be making, or cake. But sometimes it just went bad. You know, it just spoiled because you didn't use it fast enough. Well, this was a way to, you know, you were using it. Granted, it's a drop in the bucket. I mean, you throw out a quart of sour milk, big deal. You've got, you know, hundreds of gallons sitting out there in the tank on the farm. But that's not the point. You know, the point is just this kind of frugal, you know, don't waste kind of thing.
Well, you have, in your life experience and growing up on a farm, you have such an intimate understanding of what it takes to put that food on the table.
Yeah, there is that too. There is that too. My academic background and what I worked in for quite a few years for livelihood was as a nutrition educator. So I have both that kind of farm perspective, the growing, producing, making the earth say beans or corn instead of grass, as Thoreau put it, perspective. But I also have the perspective of how what we eat or don't eat shapes what we become and who we are, both in terms of our health and how we feel and how we engage with the world and the earth and with life and so on. So yeah, it's an interesting kind of package of considerations, and I can't even say I've completely thought it all through or, you know, sorted it all out in my own mind, you know, what those connections are.
Well, I definitely believe the food can be nourishing in more than a nutritional way. So I really look forward to tasting this Devil's Food Cake, which will nourish my soul and nourish my sort of sense of the world and that we live in.
Well, I hope it does. You know, everybody has a different idea, though, what chocolate cake is supposed to taste like. So I guess we'll see.
Okay.
Yeah. One of the things that I think I really love about this recipe and the way it's worded, you know how often cake recipes or other things, anytime you're baking things, there's all these different steps and stages that you have to go through in combining the ingredients. This one, it lists all these ingredients in no particular, well, maybe some particular order, but then it says, mix all at once.
I know, so there's no sifting and there's no, you know, cream the butter first.
Right, right. Mix all at once. Yeah.
Because
right.
Now this is a very simple recipe, and I have a feeling that it's maybe a little more complicated than appears on paper.
Well, you might be surprised at how it's not.
Okay.
But we can make it more complicated.
No, let's keep it simple.
All right, so I'm going to assemble the ingredients now.
Yep, I'll just follow you.
Out. Okay, all right, so pull out the sugar. So I'm just going to do a quick rundown to make sure we have everything in here. We did the sugar, cocoa, eggs, the shortening. We did the salt, flour, and the baking soda. We did the buttermilk and the vanilla. So we're going to put this in now. The oven is up to 350. I've got the little oven thermometer there, so that's... Turn that off, and then we're going to just check this real quick here. But yeah, smell that.
Mmm. It's a really rich, chocolatey scent.
Mm-hmm. There's a moistness to it.
Moist, fluffy, a very light texture, and a very delicate chocolate flavor. Mm-hmm. This is not a dense, rich cake. This is light, and it's almost dangerous because... You can eat a lot of this cake.
Exactly. I was just going to ask, would you like another piece? Yes, please.
Oh, my goodness.
This isn't a special occasion recipe, and it's not something that is a special recipe. I mean, it's special to me. It has meaning to me. But it's a very homely recipe. I mean, even just as you read the instructions for how to make it, it's just basically a list of ingredients and then mix everything together, you know. There's nothing exalted about it. It's a basic devil's food cake.
Well, and I have to say, but this is the kind of cake I want to eat all the time.
I know what you mean. I think that's one of the reasons why I thought it would be a fun one to share.
Contributor Lucian Jung produces our family recipe series. You can find previous episodes at wuwm.com.